everybody that you run into. How in the world do you think anybody's supposed to respect you? It's a brand new day. Respect yourself. Well, this is Mental Health Radio, taken from us, and I'm Sheldon Brown, host with technician Declan Curran. And as Joe Cocker says in that song, well, it's a brand new day. It's a brand new day on Take It From Us as well. And today we're going to be talking about care for carers, and also a little later in the show about the link between cannabis and mental health. Is cannabis good or bad for mental health? And that subject is something of a can of worms. Now, I hope that we've got Marina King from Equip Mental Health Services on the line. Marina, are you there?
Yes. Hi, Sheldon.
How are you doing? You parked up in your car at Whangaparā.
Yes, I am, actually.
Is that right? Yeah, what's what's your position with Equip Mental Health Services?
I am one of the family whānau coordinators there. And so we offer support for family whānau supporting a loved one with who experiences mental health issues.
Right.
And we just get alongside and help them whatever we can, and to help with tools and strategies. And
so this is quite a focus for Equip. You're based on the North Shore. I know Naomi reasonably well, and regards to her if she's having a listen.
Yes.
So this is this caring for carers who are looking out for people with mental health distress. This is quite a focus of Equip's mental health services.
Yes, it is, because with anyone's well-being, it's that holistic approach, and families and friends are very important in that. However, naturally, with mental health issues, they can get really fatigued and lack support. So it's important to kind of help them restore, help with self-care, and just going through a whole lot of different ways to do that and to handle stress themselves.
So you've got a workshop that starts up in Whangaparā on this very subject, haven't you, caring for carers?
Yes, we have. It's starting next week on Monday afternoon from 12:30 to 2. And we're meeting in there's a community, Whangaparā community hub there. It's been open for a number of months. And, their theme is well-being. And we thought it would be a good opportunity to kind of support and help the carers in the community.
So can I just confirm those times? Because the thing that I printed out said that it was definitely the 18th of February starting, and the time you said was 12:32.
Yes, there was it was originally going to be in the morning. However, mistakenly they double booked, so we had to change our time. So it's the same day, the 18th, but we've just had to put it out to the afternoon, 12:30 to 2.
Okay, well, we have been promoting it, I think, as 10:30 to 12, so that's a little bit of a change.
Sorry about that. Hopefully they'll contact us and we'll try and be there early as well.
Right, so how could they contact you, Marina, if there's any doubt about that
time? Yeah, sure. They can contact me. Well, it might be easier for them to contact the Equip front desk, which is 09477 0338, and I can give my mobile as well.
Okay.
It is Marina 021-815-412.
Right. And it's you've also got an email, marinayoung@equip.net.nz. And I think I owe you an apology. I introduced you as Marina King. Where did I get that from?
I don't know. It's all right.
It's Marina Young.
And that's right.
And your other role, of course, is that you're facilitator of this particular workshop that starts on Monday in the Whangaparoa Community Hub. And the address there, Marina?
Is Shop 8, Bar 707, Whangaparoa Road.
And how long does your workshop carry on?
It goes for up to 8 weeks.
Right, so that's the 8th of April, so it's you're asking people to commit to about an hour and a half every Monday?
Yes, if they're able, right.
Yeah. So,
and actually there would be, depending on the situation, a little bit of flexibility with that, but yeah.
So what do you mean by flexibility?
Well, the commit to the group that, you know, sometimes in life things happen, and if a person can't make it to all the weeks, we can also meet on a one-to-one.
Oh, right.
And go over whatever's been missed.
Yeah. So what's the cost of this Caring for Carers education?
It's no charge.
No charge?
Yep.
Great. So what sort of things you see as being important in this issue of caring for carers?
Yeah. One of the things that we start off with, like control and responsibility. Sometimes as carers, we carry a lot of responsibility for things that are out of our control. And just understanding that, we look at the crisis cycle, our stress levels. Have we got any positive outlets, you know, things that we enjoy, strategies to help de-stress?
That might be yoga or Tai Chi or playing tennis?
Yes, anything that they, one person did the course and they started painting again. They kind of hadn't done that for a long time, and it kind of just was something that they enjoyed and started to bring real, a bit of peace and happiness, you know, some joy back in and time for them. So there's a variety of things that people connect with, like you say, yoga, Tai Chi, painting, working, catching up with a friend over a cuppa, someone who understands.
I mean, creativity is a very good therapy, isn't it? And I suppose if your carer adopts you know, a strategy like that or a therapy like that, is it likely that that may have a positive influence on the person with mental health?
Yeah, there is some actual art therapy groups around. I think Hearts and Minds might run one than that, but people find it, sometimes there's no words to express. And there's something about being creative and doing art and kind of expressing yourself through that in the journey. So it can be really helpful, and it's a focus on what you're creating. You're just being in that moment.
Exactly. Being in the now. Well, I've just reclaimed a little batch on Waiheke Island, and I've been cutting balustrades to put on the deck and to make it child safe, and been building some timber supports for a little garden, and that sort of creativity I find very therapeutic.
Yeah, it's good for the soul, and even growing things. Sometimes people find enjoyment seeing things grow and reaping the benefits of veggies and different things that they've planted. So it's just finding that thing that connects with you.
So all of those sorts of things that you've mentioned, I guess, come under the heading of self-care. Is this a pretty important aspect for carers?
Yes, very, very important, because stress, we can not realise how stressed we are because it becomes the new norm. And like anything, if you're not having that time and caring for yourself, that stress, like a rubber band, can just snap, and you can become unwell yourself because you're just care of fatigue.
Yeah.
And so caring for oneself is very important. And as we do that, then we can be more effective in supporting and helping others.
Well, I guess if as a carer we collapse, then there's two people that are in need.
That's right.
Or more, maybe more than two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have examples where carers are looking after more than one person in a family with mental health issues?
Yes, there has been those situations. Parents who might have an adult child, and then they might have another extended family member, or it can be just one person, but the ripple effect of that, that sometimes there is more than one person who needs that extra support within the family. So that's where it's really important to have that extra support, surrounding support around you, not only family whānau, but different things happening in the community and things to connect to just kind of share that load that you're not carrying it all on your own shoulders.
So is part of self-care perhaps for these carers, is it seeking maybe some professional therapy or counselling or going to see their GP? Is that all important too?
Yeah, there is, and sometimes there's accessing some extra counselling to help them work through a variety of issues. A big thing for carers, just recently a group said, was when they have look after themselves by either going to art class or yoga, whatever, often they can feel guilty leaving their loved one or going out and doing something of enjoyment. So it's kind of working through that and validating that they're worth it, that they're able to go out and have that time. And
you mentioned the word responsibility. I guess I'm quite strong on the fact that we all have to be sort of personally responsible for our own well-being. I think when it comes down to the crunch, it's what we do to care for ourselves which is most important. So this is important for the carer, but it's also important for the person that the carer is looking out for, isn't it?
Yes, and like with anything, when you start making them more, allowing them to carry more responsibility for their actions, or setting some boundaries, like it might be just having more respect in the home, maybe helping with a chore or whatever, there's always going to be that friction for a little while because it's a change.
Mm.
As it brings boundaries and that in, but in the long term, it's worth it, and it's worth it for that other person as well.
So it's
kind of gaining some responsibility.
So it's a win-win. It's always good to get a win-win in mental health.
Yeah, and I think a lot better for the relationship in the long run too.
Yeah. Well, just give us those details again of this. It's EQIPS Caring for Carers Education and Support Group. When does it start, Marina?
It starts on next Monday, the 18th of February, and the time is 12:30 to 2 p.m., and the venue is Whangaparoa Community Hub, which is Shop 8, 707 Whangaparoa Road. That's Hibiscus Coast. So, and contact number, if anyone's of interest or have any further questions, don't hesitate to give me a call. They can contact me on 021 815 412. or they can contact the QIP office.
On the and that number is 09477 0338 at QIP Mental Health Services. Yep. How many people are you hoping to get along for your caring for carers?
Well, we normally have anything from 6 to 12. Normally, 12 is probably big enough, you know, for people to kind of feel comfortable. Mm. And there's confidentiality as well within the group, of course.
Right. So. Oh, well, we wish you all the best with that and hope that by talking to Take It From Us, you might get a little bit more interest. We never know how many people are listening to us. That's the only thing. But thank you, Marina, and apologies again for announcing or introducing you as Marina King. I don't know where that came. This is Marina Young that we're talking to, and her email is marina.young@equip.net.nz if you want to email Marina. So thank you very much.
It's all right. Thank you, Sheldon.
G'day then.
Bye.
All right. Well, let's take a music break.
Why not? I've got a track here that Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues originally wrote this track, and he did it when he was 19, released it in 1967, and it was written after he was gifted some white satin sheets in bed. I think I'm giving it away now. He had a big love affair, one which ended when another one was starting, and that's where the significance of this apparently was. But as I discover different covers along the way, I've got one after my namesake, for want of a better word, "Nights in White Satin" by Declan Galbraith.
It's not "Sheets in White Satin."
No. Oh well, they are, but yeah, all right. Quiet in the cheap seats.
Oh, it's Nights. It's Nights.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, right. Quiet in the cheap seats. Here we go. You're with Take It From Us, Mental Health Radio. We broadcast here every Tuesday at 12:30 to 1:30, and this is Take It From Us.
Nights in white satin, never reaching the end. Letters I've written, never meaning to send. Beauty I'd always missed with these eyes before. Can't say anymore, 'cause I love you. I love you.
Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And that artist there, Declan, has more than a little bit of significance to you in your life.
Yeah, well, I was scurrying along my way with music years ago and came across this guy and thought, oh, I quite like his tracks and that sort of thing. I like your name too, so I decided I'd have that, fits in with my surname, Irish and that. I wasn't born in Ireland, but I mean nothing against Irish people.
So, and this was only, what, 5-6 years ago that you changed your Christian name?
Yeah, it'd be about, probably 7, close to 8 now.
Right. Hmm. So this is where Declan came from.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it makes it a bit hard for people to track me down, you see. I can basically sneak under the radar.
Are you sure people are wanting to track you down?
Well, that's the thing, yeah.
Well, I'm host Sheldon Brown on Take It From Us, and we've just been talking to Declan, our technician, yeah, about his name change.
I'm the Muppet in the background, pushing the buttons.
Muppet in the background, yeah. Well, one of the things that we promised on today's show was to talk about cannabis and mental health. Is cannabis good or bad for our mental health? And in researching this online, and it was encouraged by an article that I got from social media with the heading, Is Cannabis Good or Bad for Mental Health? And it says underneath, the evidence says it can go either way. And I think if you take anything out of the comments about cannabis and mental health, is that this is a can of worms. Cannabis can be beneficial to our mental health, but it also can be very detrimental to it as well. And I hope you'll be somewhat patient as I work my way through this information. The reason for this is that there is a move to legalise the personal use of cannabis in New Zealand. That is a something that was promised to the Green Party as part of its relationship with Labor, and it's pretty likely that there will be a vote, a referendum on legalising the personal use of cannabis at or by the 2020 election. The other issue, of course, is that medical cannabis is very much in the news. New Zealand has an opportunity to learn from the examples where cannabis has been legalised, or medical cannabis has been legalised. It does say here that Kiwis appear torn on the whole issue of the legalisation of cannabis. I think it's going to be a very high-profile issue. And one of the things that I think needs to be taken into account is that we have this the inquiry into the government inquiry into mental health and addictions, and how does that fit with this move to liberalise our attitude towards cannabis? Because at the moment, cannabis or marijuana is one of the most widely available illegal drugs in New Zealand. That's according to the police. It comes from a plant that contains the active ingredient THC. I'm not going to read out what THC stands for. The more THC in a cannabis plant, the stronger its effects when used as a drug. So cannabis has already been legalised in Uruguay alongside 9 American states. And Canada has taken a key step towards legalisation after senators voted in favour of new legislation allowing nationwide use. So Canada would be the first G7 country to legalise the drug, and New Zealand has an opportunity to learn from these examples. The curator of Wakamana Cannabis Museum in Dunedin and a member of the Opportunities Party says New Zealand risks being completely left behind if it continues to drag its heels regarding ending prohibition of cannabis. So I think this is a very complex and controversial issue. Quoting the University of Otago's Dr. Joseph Bowden, he's told News Talk recently that data coming out of the American states where cannabis has been legalised has shown that there's a huge tax take. So there's a huge amount of money involved in the legalisation of cannabis, which many medical professionals say could be put towards drug addiction and health issues generally. Since legalising cannabis in 2014, Washington State has raked in $1 billion in tax revenues, and almost 80% of that has been directed towards health and judicial systems. It says that there's a great benefit to the environment and the economy from legalising and selling cannabis. The benefits are described as immeasurable if New Zealand legalised pot, highlighting government savings from not having to fund prohibition, getting revenue from sales, and creating a cannabis industry which would be eco-friendly to balance out New Zealand's reliance on dairying. But there are some health concerns around cannabis, and I'd like to read part of this article which asks the question, is cannabis good or bad for mental health? It says here the exciting news about the complexity of cannabis is that it holds much promise as a potential medicine for many ailments. The worrisome news, however, is that there is a gap between the hype about cannabis and its medical potential and the evidence-based research supporting the hype. And I'd have to say that one of my conclusions is that there isn't a great deal of evidence-based research which clearly states whether cannabis is good or bad for mental health. So this worry in this, the difference between the hype and the research is particularly true, it says, with respect to the topic of mental health, whereby cannabis has been touted in popular media as an effective treatment for a variety of psychiatric conditions, and they include depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress, psychosis, and addiction. The reality, says this article, is that cannabis cannot be pigeonholed as strictly helpful or harmful. And I guess that's the conclusion that I've reached over cannabis and its benefits. They really don't know whether those benefits or that cannabis or marijuana are helpful or harmful. Instead, meaningful discussion about its potential benefits and harms requires careful and nuanced consideration of the scientific literature coupled with a humble attitude, says this article. When it talks about depression, it says the science is clear that the cannabinoid system plays a role in regulating our mood. Some people might sense this intuitively. I'm sure they do when they smoke cannabis. They will tell you that cannabis can help with their depressive systems. But there have been no randomised controlled trials to date that support the use of the cannabis plant or particular cannabinoids in the treatment of depressive disorders. I'd have to say, going back many years, that my experience with cannabis on two or three occasions was that it highlighted a good mood, but it also intensified the bad mood. So if I was a little bit depressed, then that depression got more intense. If I was in a good mood, it intensified that mood to become, well, something that was highly enjoyable. It says a similar confusing picture has been painted by the scientific literature for other psychiatric conditions, not only depression. We mentioned depression. There are many variables which affect whether a person will experience increased or decreased anxiety or psychotic systems when ingesting cannabis, including the potency levels of the cannabis, the presence of other cannabis-related chemicals, the amounts that we use, and the person's frequency of use. And also our prior experience with the substance and an ability to titrate the dose and their likelihood to experience psychiatric systems. One of the things it does say that is if we have a psychiatric history, then we need to be very much more cautious about the use of cannabis. So mirroring this complexity, says this article, the current state of the scientific data for the use of cannabis in treating post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms are also mixed. So we've talked about depression, we've talked about psychosis, and here the article talks about post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms. And apparently the scientific data on this is also mixed, whereby cannabis has demonstrated both helpful and harmful effects depending on many factors. The topic of cannabis and addiction, this is another issue that we can become dependent on cannabis, and dependency, of course, can cause us to perhaps lose our jobs, not want to get up in the morning, be a bit laid back about life, and perhaps just lose our way. And so there is clearly a threat of addiction from cannabis. This whole issue has been turned on its head in recent years as cannabis has entered the discussion as a treatment for addiction. So it can not only get us a little addicted, but it can be a treatment for addictions to other substances, most notably opioids. And of course, in America, addiction to opioids is a very, very big problem, and there's a black market in the sale of opioids. There is a line of thinking that cannabis treatment for other substance addiction holds promise, not just for harm reduction, but also as a treatment for addiction symptoms, such as withdrawal and cravings. The few studies that have been done have supported the rationale and funding of future research into this topic. So that underlines again my point that there does seem to be a scarcity of research which is clear-cut about the impact of cannabis on mental health, and also this new issue raised here in this article about how cannabis can help those who are addicted to other substances. For the occasional user, it says cannabis is relatively safe. It can be made even safer by following low-risk guidelines that have been developed by the research community. But for those with mental health and addiction concerns, cannabis can be both a friend and an enemy. And I'd like to read that again. But for those with mental health and addiction concerns, cannabis can be both a friend and an enemy. And in my very limited use of it, probably 20 years ago, it was a friend when it was kind to me and when it put me in a euphoric state. But it was also an enemy when my depression perhaps was a little bit more pronounced and I smoked cannabis and, well, it made me somewhat more depressed. The article goes on to say if it is to be used as part of a psychiatric treatment plan, then there is an ethical imperative to develop such a plan in consultation with a treatment team. I mean, that means your medical professional. And that medical professional needs to have practices, or he needs to practice evidence-based medicine. There's a risk, it says, of self-medication with cannabis, and that risk is that other evidence-based treatments could be disregarded, which could result in worsening of mental health and addiction symptoms. So that's an article that I gleaned from social media. The heading is cannabis good or bad for mental health? The evidence says it can go either way. So we're devoting the rest of our show today to cannabis. Is it good for or bad for mental health? But let's take a music break, Declan.
Indeed. I was just going to say, when we come back from the music break, just wondering how Colorado is going to become pretty much a test sort of for the world, I guess, and also whether the age factor comes into it as well.
Well, yes, I don't have a lot of information on Colorado, but I think it's certainly one of the nine United States that have legalised. And what's your understanding about Colorado? Haven't they already legalised marijuana there?
Yeah, they've got shops there, I think. Apparently people can go in and choose what they want, all sorts of different strains and that sort of thing. I don't really know a hell of a lot. I've never experienced it.
I think there's a Kiwi from Hamilton who's really cashing in. There was a documentary on Sunday about this New Zealander who's gone over there to get into the marijuana trade, and he's doing exceedingly well.
It'd be interesting to see whether it has any impact on crime rates, whether it reduces or, because I guess if you've got it available from a retail outlet, there's going to be some form of price structure and control over it. So I don't know how that's going to go. Some of the gangs will be crying because they'll be missing out probably. Anyway, I was going to play a totally different song next, but I thought I'd play one we've played before. It's got a little naughty word in it, which I'm going to try and snip out of it when we play it. And it's called I Took a Pill in Ibiza. I thought it was probably quite appropriate.
With Ibiza?
Some of them call it Ibiza and some call it Ibiza, so I just sit on the fence and say, oh, well, take your pick. Anyway, it's by Mike Posner. And it's also got the name Seeb, S-E-E-B, as a remix. Anyway, don't know where they get this stuff from. But anyway, you're listening to Take It From Us, Mental Health Radio. We broadcast here on Planet FM 104.6 every Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30. And here is I Took a Pill in Ibiza.
I took a pill in Ibiza to show a Fiji I was cool. And when I finally got sober, felt 10 years older, but it was something to do. I'm living out in L.A. I drive a sports car just to poop. I'm a real big baller cause I made $1 million and I spend it on girls and shoes. But you don't wanna be high like me, never really know why like me. You don't ever wanna step off that roller coaster and be all alone. And you don't wanna ride the bus like this, never know who to trust like this. You don't wanna be stuck up on that stage singing, stuck up on that stage singing. Oh, I know a sad soul, sad souls, darling. All I know are sad souls, sad souls. I'm
You're with Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And I'm host Sheldon Brown with technician Declan Curran, and we're talking today about cannabis, whether it's good or bad for our mental health. It's a complex issue, a bit of a can of worms, which I didn't realise I was opening up when promoting this yesterday on Facebook and through the radio database. It does seem that Kiwis appear torn on this issue, with some hailing cannabis as a miracle drug that can reduce stress and cure seizures, while others have warned of its addictiveness and links to depression and suicidal thoughts. And this whole issue of cannabis, the referendum, which is likely either before or on the 2020 election date, something that has been promised by Labor to the Green Party. Also, the move by the Ministry of Health. They are leading work to develop a scheme that will enable domestic commercial cultivation and manufacture of medicinal cannabis. And the enabling domestic cultivation and manufacture is expected to make quality medicinal cannabis products more readily available. This will remove a barrier for patients accessing medicinal cannabis, as health practitioners will be able to prescribe these products with confidence. And I'm raising this issue of cannabis, whether it's good or bad for mental health, in the light of the government inquiry on mental health and addictions. And one of the recommendations of that inquiry is to take a strong look at the alcohol and other drug and taking a very strong stand against alcohol and other drugs. So there does seem to me to be a little bit of a contradiction that we could be liberalising cannabis when at a time the inquiry, the government inquiry, has stressed very strongly that we should take a stronger stance against alcohol and other drugs. The in an opinion article, a commentator, Associate Professor Giles Newton Howes of the University of Otago's Wellington Department of Psychological Medicine, asks, is medical cannabis a wolf in sheep's clothing? And he adds, as the debate over legalising medical cannabis burns on, the arguments for potential benefits need to be weighed against the arguments for risk, particularly to mental health and society's view of the drug generally. He says, with increasing use of cannabis in the community, the mental health problems directly related to use are likely to increase. These are well documented and include psychosis, anxiety disorders, cognitive problems, and addiction. Psychotic mental disorder like schizophrenia is a significant mental health and public health concern, and the links with cannabis and psychosis are clearest for those when youth use cannabis. And actually, I had coffee with a doctor friend of mine this morning, and he was saying that the use of cannabis by young people, particularly between the ages of 16 and 19, was particularly risky, especially in that it could induce schizophrenia. So and one of the things that I have learnt in my career in mental health is that schizophrenia does start in those early years. It says, this article from the Associate Professor at the University of Otago, it says, any potential for the use of cannabis as a medicine in youth and early adulthood is risky. The link between cannabis and anxiety disorders is also most pronounced in teenagers. The scientific evidence about the health effects of cannabis is complex, and there are some gaps in our knowledge. And I think I'd really want to reinforce that. In my research yesterday, there certainly seems to be fairly significant gaps in information, and there's very little clarity about whether cannabis is good or bad for our mental health. Let's just take another music break then, Declan.
Have you got stuck for words?
Well, not exactly stuck for words, but I just need a break to see where we might go to wrap up our show.
Oh, righto. Okay, well, I've got a New Zealand-born possum here by the name of Daniel Bedingfield. We played one of his songs before, If You're Not the One. This one's called Never Gonna Leave Your Side, and it became his third number one on the UK singles chart in July of 2003. Interestingly, the music video was filmed in a city called Ronda in Spain, known as the Dreaming City, and it's located on the antipode of Auckland, where, of course, Bedingfield was born. Here's Never Going to Leave Your Side by Daniel Bedingfield, and you're listening to Take From Us, Mental Health Radio, broadcasting every Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30 right here on Planet 104, 106.4 FM. Jeez, my brain
104.6.
is... 104.6. Oh, God, I'm getting it all around the wrong way, I tell you. I'm just going to bow out once I get this guy going.
Feel like a song without the word, a man without a soul, a bird without its wings, a heart without a home. I feel like a night without a soul, the sky without the sun, 'cause you are. A ship beneath the waves, a child who's lost its way, a door without a key, a face without a name. I feel like a breath without the air, and every day's the same since you've gone. Hey.
You're with Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
Yeah, and I'm Sheldon Brown talking today about cannabis, whether it's good or bad for our mental health, and I finished off just mentioning the risks to young people of the use of cannabis, and it's reinforced here in a quote from somebody from Otago University who says, what we do know is that the dangers of cannabis use are strongest for young users and heavy users. Heavy use is defined as somewhere between daily and weekly use. And this professor is quoted saying young brains are really susceptible to the effects of the drug. So that does seem to be one clear message about cannabis and mental health, and that is that young brains are really susceptible to the drug, and that it could induce schizophrenia or psychotic episodes. Generally, under the heading of cannabis and mental health, it talks here about dependence, and I guess that applies very much to alcohol and other drugs. Cannabis dependence seems to have been proven, it says, and this has been bolstered by evidence of large numbers of young adults presenting to treatment services requesting help to get off cannabis. Today, researchers are largely agreed on the adverse effects of dependence. Young people using cannabis are more likely to leave school early, fail to develop satisfying personal relationships, and be dependent on welfare. In the early 90s, researchers suspected a modest association between cannabis use and major depression. But in the intervening years, and with a major study in Christchurch, which has provided evidence of an association between cannabis use and depression, although they say this link is still relatively weak and difficult to detect, and this appears to me to be very much underlines the complexity of this issue about cannabis and mental health. It does say here there is a stronger association between cannabis use and anxiety disorder, particularly where people are dependent on cannabis. Research has also established a link between cannabis and suicidal ideation, particularly in males, and our professor from Otago University says by the age of 30, the vast majority of cannabis, of heavy cannabis users are male. There is, according to research, a strong association and link between cannabis and psychotic symptoms, but again, the association with depression is harder to understand. Did users turn to cannabis because they were depressed, or did cannabis use drive their depression? So the jury seems to be out on the issue with cannabis and depression. There is a fairly widely acknowledged link now between schizophrenia and the use of cannabis, and the professor says that the link is, he says, almost undeniable. Another cannabis authority says recognition of the harmful effects of cannabis is a major change in the past 20 years. It's no longer considered the healthy option in terms of drug use. And he's quoted as saying, I don't associate cannabis use as being particularly healthy at all. We know that there are a lot of harms associated with cannabis. Of course, there are a number of benefits as well. We can feel happy and relaxed. We get more talkative and there's probably more laughter. We get changes in mood, perceptions, thoughts and feelings. And then in this list, we hear that there is a chance of possible paranoia, anxiety or panic, and potential worsening symptoms of existing mental health problems in those with a history of such problems. So long-term effects can involve dependency on cannabis, which we have also talked about. Risks also increase if your mental state and physical characteristics mean that you react negatively to the drug. The risks of long-term harm will increase if you use cannabis regularly or heavily over a long period of time. And it does warn that you should avoid having cannabis to cope with your emotions like sadness or depression. So, Declan, we're just about come to the end of it. Community notices.
We've got some goodies there.
Well, just reiterate that we've spoken today to Marina Young about Equip Mental Health Services Caring for Carers Education and Support Group. That's going to run from next Monday, the 18th of February, from 12:30 to 2 p.m. That's a change in the time. And it's going to run through to the 8th of April, and the venue is the Whangaparā Community Hub, which is Shop 8, 707 Whangaparā Road. What else have you got there?
Well, I've got one connected. Peer employment training, Connect Supporting Recovery at 28C Lambie Drive in Manukau, starts this Thursday, the 14th. Right through to the 19th of March. You graduate on the 20th of March, and it runs from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. So if you are living in the county's Manukau area and you've got an interest in working in peer support, this is for you. Light morning and afternoon tea is provided. Lunch, obviously, bring your own. And your contact is Rachel Maloney. You can get her on 021-625560 or email her at rachel.maloney@connectsr.org.nz. And that's rachel.maloney. Do you want me to throw my next one after it?
Well, we'll just say there that peer support is all part of a very extensive program that is being promoted by Drive Direction. So I'd check out Drive Direction's website. Drive is part of Connect, and of course Connect and Framework are merging. That's been announced, so that's very exciting news. So check out Drive Direction, because they have a lot of exciting programs running in the next 2 months.
I was just going to add in here that Braveheart has got their Higher Ground presentation at the West Auckland meeting. It's in Green Bay. I've got the details at home, actually, which isn't much good there. It meets 7 p.m. on Thursday, the 14th of February. So for further inquiries on that, you can free phone 0508 272834 and have a chat with Scarlett O'Neill.
And Bravehearts, of course, is an organisation caring for carers, particularly carers that are looking out for loved ones with addictions. Just the last one today, if you're searching for happiness, well, Nathan Headley, who is a poet, he has got a show in Auckland, 26th of February, starting, that's a Tuesday, starting at 2. He's again on 27th of February. This is going to be at 85 Garnet Road in Poinchev. You can check out the details on www.iticket.co.nz for Nathan's show, Searching for Happiness.
We're out of here. Catch you next week.
Thanks for listening. Anybody's supposed to respect you.